It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The Roberto Clemente Award, recognizing a Major League Baseball player whose contributions best represent the game, will be presented Saturday during the World Series. The legendary Pirates right fielder is the subject of a new book by his family. One of the authors, Roberto's son, Luis, recently spoke with WESA's Kevin Gavin.
Hall of Famer, winner of 4 batting titles, National League MVP, 12 gold gloves, member of baseball's 3,000 hit club, 2-time World Series champion, all very telling descriptions of the late Roberto Clemente. But maybe more importantly, family man and humanitarian. Clemente, the true legacy of an undying hero, has been written by the Clemente family, Roberto's widow Vera, and his sons Roberto Jr., Luis, and Enrique, or Ricky. Luis Clemente joins us in studio. Luis, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh, and welcome back to Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Baseball fans might have a favorite image of your father that sticks with them. One of my favorites is the last regular season game he played, a double off of John Matlack, his 3,000th career hit, standing at second base, that look of pride on his face, and just not jumping up and down, but just sort of doffing his cap to acknowledge the fans. You were only 6 at the time?
I was 5.
5 at the time? Okay. What's your favorite image of your father on the ball field, or is it something off the ball field?
You know, that one that you describe is one of my favorite images. I've actually converted it into a logo with this program that I'm working on now. But another one of my favorites is Dad with my 2 brothers and I in Pirate uniform, all 3.
All 3 in Pirate uniform. I assume all 3 were wearing 21.
Absolutely.
Now, speaking of images, the book is loaded with great photos on the field, at home, and a lot of these have never been seen publicly, right?
That is correct. That is correct. We've waited all this time to come out with this book, you know, year after year. There's been different publications that are out there, but not necessarily accurate. And our uncle, who was still alive, Dad's brother, who was the one who actually taught him to play baseball, Matino, he would tell me, you know, I pick up a book, I start reading. When I see something that is not accurate, that's it. You know, I get turned down by it, and I just, you know, stop reading. And I said, well, I'm going to promise you that when we actually do our book, we're going to correct all of the things that you know are not accurate, because imagine, from the childhood, who better than you and then mom are the ones who truly know. So here you have it.
In addition to those inaccuracies, there's obviously insights that couldn't possibly be part of any other article or other book, because there has been plenty written about your father.
Absolutely. That's what we're saying. You know, how many times can you tell the story? Right now, we're telling you the story of what happened during the story. For instance, the World Series before Game 1.
Which one, 60 or 71?
71.
Okay.
Dad had eaten bad oysters, and he got food poisoned.
Oh.
And mom was very concerned that he wasn't going to be able to even play in the World Series itself. Well, history tells he became the MVP player. But many things happen such as that are just of interest, and people say, wow. So imagine that. He gave the extra mile to be able to become the MVP player, and he gathered the press before the first game and told them, you're going to see who Roberto Clemente is. You're obligated to write about what's going to happen the right way. And he was very, very proud of what he accomplished. And once again, 3,000 hit, being the last time at bat, the only chance to get it, right on the spot, got it. So it's you cannot script things like that.
You mentioned the 71 World Series. A couple things come into play here. I guess he knew that this was his chance to really show the world, not just Pittsburgh. We knew what a great ball player he was, but the nation, the baseball world, and the world in general, that this is the way he played every day, all the time.
Every day. And he wanted to use himself as an example to open that door for other Latino players, because he felt that he represented all of the Latinos that were playing ball at the time, and that would actually make other teams consider that type of talent. You know, the way he played with that energy and courage, and like it really meant something. So that was his call.
You mentioned the other Latino players, and it's just there's this reverence, I think, among Latino ballplayers for Roberto Clemente, and not just the ones, obviously, from Puerto Rico, but whether they're from Venezuela, the Dominican, Panama, Manny Sanguin, of course. It just goes on and on. It was the whole Latin world that had this appreciation for your dad.
Absolutely, and he knew he represented everyone. That's why he's referenced as Latino Jackie Robinson. And that's how people really feel it. A lot of people feel that Jackie does not represent them, and they see that Dad does, you know, because he really was able to set up, you know, the flag. He was not the first player, but because of what he did and accomplished, you know, really put him on a totally separate place.
How did he feel about that, you know, that reference, that comparison being the Latin Jackie Robinson?
Well, you know, he really admired what Jackie accomplished, and you know, he really, I think, recognized the importance of it. But on his own, he always said that he played like himself, and he was very proud about that. When they would compare him to another player, he says, yeah, nevertheless, but I play like Roberto Clemente. And he was always very, very secure of himself. And I think that transcended. For instance, the other night, we were in L.A. recording this show that shows the 10 most influential Hispanic sportsmen,
right.
And he became number one. Fox Sportsnet did another one on looking for sports true heroes. Dad came number one, Jackie came number two. So I think that he's been totally recognized, not only in the United States, but also people don't know the first place ever named after him was in Mannheim, Germany. Weeks after the accident. And then you have Liberia, Africa, issuing a coin in 1994, a $10 coin honoring him as well. And that, to me, meant a lot because Liberia in the 1800s was a place that slaves were not going to be hunted. It was a secure ground. And for them, dealing with human rights back then, to recognize that as one of the biggest humanitarians with a coin, it means a whole lot, all the way in Africa. So
that's amazing. I mean, these are the kind of things you would expect and, of course, have seen in San Juan and other parts of Puerto Rico and, of course, Pittsburgh and anywhere but Germany and Liberia.
Yes, yes. Japan has an equal award that the one we present in Major League Baseball is called the Golden Spirit Award in memory of Roberto Clemente. They've written books. They've done documentaries as well, so.
We mentioned Jackie Robinson and Roberto. Now, Roberto did not come that many years after Jackie broke into the major leagues, and so he had some of the same bigotry issues to deal with. But your father also had something else, the language barrier.
Absolutely. He had two strikes against him. And
well, he's a great two-strike hitter anyway, right?
Right, right. But that's what distinguished him. You know, he had a lot of dignity, and he would tell the rest of the players that were with him left back in the bus while the rest of his teammates would go into the restaurants, that any of those of them, each of them that would actually accept food from this restaurants, you know, they would have to go at it with him. And they said, but Roberto, we're starving. We have to eat something. He said, you have to have dignity. If we're not good enough to be served in that restaurant, then that food is not good enough for our soul. So he got the general manager to provide a separate vehicle, a station wagon. And he didn't put up with staying or waiting for anyone. They went their own separate way. And that's what really identified him. He didn't ask to be treated better. He has to be treated equally.
Our guest on Essential Pittsburgh is Luis Clemente. He, along with his brothers Roberto Jr. and Ricky and their mother Vera, have written Clemente, The True Legacy of an Undying Hero. This is something, I mean, it bothered me as a fan, and it obviously had to bother your father and your mom. If a sports writer asked a question, your dad would give an honest answer. So, I mean, we are so used to in society saying, so how are you, and really not mean it.
Correct.
Your dad would give an answer, and because of injuries he suffered in an auto accident, he did have a bad back and a bad neck. Anybody that watched him come to the plate and saw him, you know, with all kind of neck gyrations trying to get loose or feel good, and he would tell them, you know, the neck's not too good today, and then they'd see him go out and have a wonderful day. And so, well, how could he possibly perform with these injuries? How could he perform that? He must be a hypochondriac.
Exactly. He was so sincere, you know, it was so sincerity. You're asking me how I feel. I think I truly believe you want to know. I'm going to let you know. and he will give that straight answer. And that definitely marked him as a hypochondriac, and he really resented that because he says, you know, why are you asking me then if you don't want to know? And he did have a really bad accident, and he was driving, coming from a game, a winter ball game in Puerto Rico, and he was rushing, and there was his drunk driver that went across a red light, and they collided. That's when his back got hurt, and ever since, you know, and that's why he started seeking remedies and got into chiropractor practices early on.
Right. Did your dad feel overlooked? And let's face it, he played at a time when there were a lot of great ballplayers, a lot of great outfielders, Mays, Mantle, Aaron, but he didn't quite get the attention. Now, they did hit more home runs, but they didn't have his average. And as great as Willie Mays as a defensive player was, I still think Roberto was better. But that's just personal opinion. That's what's great about baseball. But did he feel overlooked or overshadowed?
He didn't like when he was voted eighth.
In the 60 MVP voting.
For the MVP vote, yes. He always resented that. He says, you know, impossible. Curious story, when the old century team was put into place, the fans had a vote, and there were nine outfields that would be chosen by the fans. Right. And then there was another special committee that was put together that was going to include those who they felt needed to be there, period. That came in 10th place by the fans' vote. So he didn't make the first cut. The next player would be him, 10. And then there was Stan Musial, who was number 11 in place. That had over 11,000 votes over Stan Musial. But the special committee kind of like just overlapped and they passed that, and they included Stan Musial in the team. Right around the time that the voting took place in Puerto Rico, at our home, at mom's, there was two original paintings, number one hit and the 3,000 hit. The number one hit fell off the wall, and there was a bulb that shattered. Just no one was in their bedroom, and it just shattered. Mom was saying, this is kind of leery, because when we find out later, the time of the voting, we says, you know what, someone's not happy. And and you know, certainly things like that, he really resented. He says, you know what, no one should be taking away the credit that they deserve. And he had a problem with that.
We've been talking a lot of baseball, obviously, but this is not just a baseball book. This is a family book. It's some great stories that are told in here, including some a lot of these stuff I didn't know. And that was your dad had Martin Luther King as a guest on the family farm for a while, and he really respected Dr. King.
Absolutely. He sure did. He was one of his idols, his heroes. And him and Monty Irving, and, yeah, you know, it's just to know that they had some time together. I would love to have been there. And to just to listen in the conversation and see, you know, what was being shared, because that was an activist. That really, you know, he was totally against prejudice, against, he was all for the working class. He demanded respect for the fans, and he truly believed that the fans deserve all of the players' respect and time and devotion. That's why he spent many hours signing autographs to anyone who would put something in front of him. At the beginning of the career, you know, he didn't know anyone, and that's how he makes so many friends here in Pittsburgh. So with Dr. Martin Luther King, it is the third person with most plays named after in the U.S. And I believe it's John F. Kennedy, Dr. Martin Luther King, and then Dad. So to have those two share in the same
space.
That's
pretty good company.
I would say.
Coming up now on 41 years on your dad's death, he was, of course, on the DC-7 prop plane. It was loaded with supplies for the earthquake victims in Nicaragua. Your dad, I didn't know this, had visited Nicaragua before, earlier that year, and made a bunch of friends there. And is that one of the reasons why he felt compelled to go, or just, even if he didn't know anyone there, he would have felt compelled to go?
Well, he was there in the baseball series. He was managing the Puerto Rico national team. And Nicaragua at that moment reminded him of when he was being raised in Puerto Rico. And he totally fell in love with Nicaragua and made friends. And when he found out after that series, he actually, that's why in Germany that field was named after him. He became really good friends with the German team. He felt compelled, and there was a need for him to go back and help. But what people don't realize is that there were three flights that actually made it. And so aid actually did get there, and there was also a sea barge that made the trip as well. And they had to argue with the Somoza regime because they wanted for everything to be dropped off and then to return back to Puerto Rico. And they says, this is coming from Mr. Clemente. There was a special radio communication indicating what were the true needs for the hospital. We needed x-ray machines. They needed tracheotomy tubes. They needed very specific items. And then they would let them pass. But the last plane, that was Death's plane, what was left, he wanted to go. And there's a lot of rumors, but at one point, that thought of mom being the one going, which is very interesting. Because, you know, there's even been rumors about a mistress.
Going along or going in his place?
Yeah, going alone. But there was a family coming from the United States to spend New Year's with us in Puerto Rico. And so they decided that, no, she needed to be there. So a lot of things in this book that people don't realize.
Steve Blass, of course, a teammate of your dad's, told ESPN for a special program years later, after your father's death, that, quote, it's not just a death, it's a hero's death. A lot of athletes do wonderful things, but they don't die doing it.
That is very true. I don't think it's a coincidence that dad is still being honored and as a true hero, because that's what he was. Baseball was a vehicle for him to get his message across. That's why we named the book the way we did. You know, it's truly the undying legacy of the hero.
Did you feel compelled to carry on with your father's work? And I'm not talking about on the ball field. Of course, you were in the Pirates organization for a few years.
Right.
Your brother, Roberto Jr., was in the Phillies organization. Mm-hmm. But rather, you know, sort of work among the people, the kind of stuff that your dad intended to do after his baseball career was over.
Yes.
And
yes.
Was that more of a burden on you?
I have to tell you, for me to move on with my life, I had to disconnect myself a little bit from the last name. I would be driving and read, you know, Roberto Clemente Avenue. To me, it was the same as JFK's Avenue. You know, I did not relate. And disengaging myself that way mentally helped me cope with it to the point where now I am really totally engaged in the legacy programs. And I don't do it studying what he wanted to do. I just understand what is important to be done, and then I get signals that that's exactly, I'm right on track. So it's funny how Dad has a way of letting me know that it's okay.
One more question for you. And yeah, the admiration for what your father did on the baseball field and off the field, it's grown through the years. I mean, more so, let's face it, since his death and during his entire 18-year major league career. I mean, your mother, Vera, is practically treated as royalty when she walks onto the field of a Major League Baseball stadium to receive an award, present an award. Does this help the family, knowing the impact that decades later your father's still having?
You know, I go and do a lot of speaking engagements, and I never write anything. And the one time I didn't say something that I always say, and I'll save it for last. I had the reaction of a female from the Swedish. She was in tears. And she says, listen, I don't know your father's story. This was in Notre Dame Church in New York. But I must tell you, the way you speak, there's something so special about how you touch each individual that is here, says so much about your mother. And I said, wow. I called mom and told her, and because I always say I'm very proud to be Roberto Clemente's son, but I feel extremely fortunate to be Vera's son as well. Having that combination as parents is just unbelievable, and she's done so much to keep that legacy alive. And she's done things that, like I always say, if there's talk about Mother Teresa, there has to be talk about Mother Vera as well. And it's, you know, things that we would criticize her, we're doing ourselves. She is the pillar. She has been totally a woman that loved her husband, still loves him. She never dated anyone. And the example she gave us is just, you know, goes beyond steel. still. She's the only official ambassador for Major League Baseball. She's a goodwill ambassador for Major League Baseball. And, you know, we learn from her.
Luis Clemente, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Clemente family, Vera, Roberto's widow, and their sons Roberto Jr., Luis, and Ricky have written Clemente, the true legacy of an undying hero. I'm Kevin Gavin, and this is Essential Pittsburgh.
Coming up, we'll hear from the author of the Lemony Snicket books. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.